If you wanted to learn about sex and all the things that go with it, pleasure, consent, intimacy, vulnerability, would you head for The Joy of Sex or the Kama Sutra? Or would you turn to Plato and Hannah Arendt? Damon Young did. I mean, he has studied philosophy for many years, sure, but he'd also realised that he had lots of unanswered questions about the choices we make in the bedroom and their implications. He wrote a book about it, On Getting Off, Sex and Philosophy. And a heads up, there will be some graphic material here and some material that might be confronting for some listeners. Damon Young, welcome back to Life Matters.
Good morning.
Now, when did you start thinking that philosophy was a good place to learn more about sex?
Well, it wasn't a request for me to up my performance. I suppose it was the realization that I feel like I've been thinking about sex as long as it mattered to me, you know, for decades.
Haven't we all?
And yet, as a philosopher, when I stopped and thought about it, I hadn't really been thinking about it. I'd wanted it. I'd had pictures of it in my head and pictures of it elsewhere, but I hadn't really sat down and thought about it as I might about other things. As you know, I've written about gardens, I've written about exercise, I've written about reading, and yet here's this very familiar, very important thing, and I felt like I really hadn't reflected on it.
So an intellectual approach to sex is a very interesting idea, but one problem that jumps out to me immediately when I think about what the great thinkers and writers of the past have to say about sex is that they're almost all dead white men, at least in the Western intellectual canon. Does that mean that you're necessarily limiting your insights about human sexuality if you go to those people?
Look, that's a really good question. One of the things I found when I was researching this is that the great, you know, a Western European tradition of philosophy has at least two serious problems, and there are a whole host of others, but they have a serious problem with women and they have a serious problem with sex. And a lot of this has to do with masculine fear. It has to do with masculine insecurity, but they've built this into the structure of this thought. So I had to do a lot of work to, I think, overcome some of those prejudices.
Indeed. And did you find many women? I know Heloise of Heloise and Abelard had quite a lot to say about the pros and cons of marriage, but were there other women whose thinkings and writings were available to you?
Not about sex itself. And it's really not until the sort of edge of the 20th century that you find philosophers taking sex seriously as something, first of all, that could be good for you and good for thinking, but also something as worthy of philosophical discussion. And I don't think it's a coincidence that it's also in the 20th century that we find more women claiming space within philosophy. It's still bad. It's still very much a male-dominated enterprise, but because of the efforts of a great many amazing women, I think philosophy itself has been enriched. So now we have more capacity to ask these questions.
Surely the French would have come up with a few things here and there.
Well, certainly Simone de Beauvoir has some fantastic things to say, and I featured de Beauvoir quite heavily in On Getting Off. But if you look at her life partner and sometimes her sexual partner, Jean-Paul Sartre, his discussions of sex are often really impoverished. And in fact, he was a man who didn't really like sex that much. He liked to have beautiful women around him, but he found sex icky, ew, slimy, gross.
Yeah, a lot, as you point out in the book, a lot of the Western greats didn't have much useful to say about philosophy, and so that was like a red rag to your philosophical bull, Damon.
Yes.
So speaking with Damon Young here, philosopher, writer and commentator. And I guess, you know, we're fairly familiar with the idea that sex is icky and it shouldn't happen except in marriage and to make children, and maybe pleasure is okay, but only under those circumstances.
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe even not. How far have we really come? I mean, have modern thinkers theorized sex in useful ways for us? Because things have changed a lot in the way normal people discuss sex.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's very well known philosophers of sex like Alan Sobel and Singer. There are all kinds of papers and books published on the topic. I mean, it really has come a long way, so to speak. But it really is just the beginning. I mean, we have had, at least in the tradition of Western European philosophy, over 2,000 years. And throughout most of that time, the response has been either to trivialize sex as something not worthy of discussion, to just ignore it, or to treat it as a kind of, you know, demonic enterprise that we have to, you know, lessen. So, yeah, now there's some good philosophy happening, whether it's about sex itself or the ethics of sex or the relationship between sex and gender. It's very exciting, actually, but it really is just the beginning.
I was really struck, Damon, by how you chose to include an example from your life and to really look at that in great detail and use it as a jumping off point to spark some thinking and some discussion about sex and power and consent and intimacy between people. And that was when a girlfriend asked you to choke her during sex. What conclusions did you come to about that? Because the power imbalance seemed to have been a really big thing for you in that.
Yeah, okay, so I need to step back a bit. It's really important to understand that for me at that time, sex wasn't just sex, it was a kind of erotic sacrament. And it was all about pure sweetness and tenderness and kindness. And through that, we would become one. It was a very romantic idea of what sex is, this kind of union of selves.
And a lot of people would say nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and I don't have a problem with that. That is absolutely an aspect of sexual experience, although I would say that it's very important that there isn't a pure union of selves often, because this is a meeting of two. And it's so important to recognize the other as another, not just as a reflection of yourself. But putting that aside, so, you know, I have this image of myself of this sort of great sexual swaggering man, but gently, tenderly bringing along this little woman to pleasure. I mean, you know, I was a young man and I'm caricaturing it now, but I really believed it then. And then in the middle of this sort of blessed religious event of tenderness, she asked me to choke her. And I didn't understand. And then she asked me again, much more forcefully. And I thought there was something wrong with her. You know, it didn't occur to me for a moment as a young man that the fault here was in my understanding of what she wanted and needed.
And it's really interesting the way you unpick that, because there is a lot of thinking about BDSM, bondage, domination, sadism, masochism, that people who want those things are broken or unhealthy. And you argue that they're not. It's not necessarily an internalization of some kind of hatred of women, say. But is it that easy to separate patriarchy and misogyny, that kind of ocean we were born into, from the desires that some of us have?
It's not. It's very difficult. But I think one of the things I think is brilliant about the BDSM community is that they have developed these wonderful scripts of consent. So there is so much emphasis on enthusiastic consent, on freely committing to this sort of sensual commonwealth that the two of you or three of you or how many are part of. They recognize these power imbalances. So they've developed this amazing explicit structure of kind of mutual reciprocity to walk through. You can't undo these social imbalances, but as intimates, you can try to work through them with an eye on power and pleasure. And certainly what I finally understood many years later, after this scene, is that this could have been an act of tenderness. It wouldn't have been me being brutal or cruel. I would have been tenderly, carefully giving her exactly what she felt she needed, and as part of a sort of clear communicative relationship.
though I think there are also a lot of people listening, Damon Young, who would be very thankful if young men did take a moment out to think about the ramifications of what they were doing and whether it was coming from a good place if asked to do something similar. So it's just, there's so much to think about. I want to quickly touch on one other thing that you look at in your book on getting off about sex and philosophy. It's you describing pornographic footage of a woman having sex with a machine, a robot of sorts. What do you say that we can learn from this?
Okay, so, I mean, I didn't understand this. I watched this. I got nothing from it. And one of the things I reflect of in the book is just my absolute lack of arousal. And it was fascinating as a philosopher to sit and watch this thing that did absolutely nothing for me.
But obviously does something for other people because that footage
exactly
exists.
Exactly. And I wanted to understand partly what that was. The conclusion I came to was that that enormous metallic, mechanic penis was partly a representation of a kind of male aspiration. Powerful, always hard, never failing, but most importantly, just kind of drilling this woman to orgasm. She couldn't avoid it. She couldn't get away with it. As soon as she had committed to this machine, there was no way she could avoid orgasm. So it's this sense of powerful cosmic necessity. All the forces of the universe are concentrated in this enormous shining wang. And through that wang, she gets pleasure. That's the fantasy,
yep,
of course. But insofar as it is sexy, and it's not sexy to me, but insofar as it is sexy, it's only sexy because she has committed, because she's consented, because she has said, I give myself over to this pleasure. And for me, the heart of any kind of sexual arousal is that consent. But it's another being or more than one being saying, yes, please.
But in that footage, we can't be sure it's true consent unmediated by other factors, economic necessity, some other force acting on her. And it does seem in some ways like another example of women's sexuality being represented as performative and utilitarian. I mean, isn't this the core mystery of sex, whether you're looking at sex between two or more people or a person and a machine, that this mystery of the tension between the interiority of the feelings and the way it can connect you to another human being, that potential intimacy. Are there writers you found that actually helped us with that?
Yes, I mean, in a roundabout way. In one of the chapters, I talk about this enormous gap between my pleasure and my partner's pleasure. And I found this fascinating because we know we can give one another pleasure, but we can't know that pleasure. Even if I, as a white, middle-aged, middle-class male, if I'm with another white, middle-class, middle-aged male, I can't know his pleasure, let alone anyone else's. And so I actually turned to Wittgenstein, the philosopher, who has this a sort of a thought experiment where he talks about a beetle in a box. And the idea is everyone walks around with a beetle in a box. No one can see anyone else's beetle, but they have this marvelous conversations about beetles. You know, they talk, they chat. How's your beetle? My beetle's fantastic. How's your beetle? It's a bit somber today. He was talking about pain. We can't feel one another's pain, but we enter into a cultural world where language exists and we learn how to speak. The same is true for sex. At its best, our pleasure enters into a kind of conversation. That conversation might be verbal, but it might also be physical. We learn to become eloquent with one another's pleasure, even though we can't feel it.
And I love, Damon, how you end on this note. Sex is too complicated to mean any one thing, and we ought to be suspicious of simple interpretations, others or our own. Much food for thought in this book. Thank you so much for joining us on Life Matters today.
Thank you.
Damon Young, philosopher, writer, commentator. His latest book is called On Getting Off, Sex and Philosophy.